is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
Another installment of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game show live. I'm your host for the evening, Nick Sesento, covering all the action from tonight's 126-120 victory for the Boston Celtics over the Sacramento Kings. There's no place like home, especially for that man. Mama, there goes that man, Kyrie Irving. 31 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds. A triple-double for the point guard, Kyrie Irving, as the Boston Celtics return home after a pretty much successful four-game West Coast road trip, winning three of those four games in California. No need to recap that road trip, defeating the Golden State Warriors by 33 points at Oracle, getting some revenge against the Los Angeles Lakers for an earlier loss last month. But tonight was all about the Boston Celtics at TD Garden, taking on the Sacramento Kings. Came into this game with a record of 41-27, leaving with a record of 42-27. Still in fifth place in the Eastern Conference, two games behind both the 76ers and the Indiana Pacers. Two ways you could look at this Boston Celtics team coming into this game. If you want to look at their last 10 games, not including this one, they're 4-6 in their last 10. But that doesn't really tell the whole story, because the Boston Celtics figured something out last week on that long six-hour plane ride, the fabled flight, the fabled plane ride, in which the Boston Celtics seemingly generated chemistry and camaraderie and friendship out of thin air and a deck of Uno cards, apparently. So you could either look at the Boston Celtics' last 10 games and say, 4-6, not that great the last 10 games, but having won three of their previous five, now you can say four of their previous five after tonight's win, solid outing for the Boston Celtics. Looks like they've turned the corner, although tonight was a scare, tale of two halves for the Celtics and the Kings. Kings came out early, one of the Boston Celtics' biggest weaknesses, and if you ask Brad Stevens, he would tell you the exact same thing. An article posted on NESN, New England Sports Net, literally half an hour before the game started, was Brad Stevens talking about the Celtics' need to improve on their transition defense. And that's exactly what hurt them early in this game, as they fell down to the Sacramento Kings by 17 points at one point in the first half. And a lot of it had to do with poor transition defense, poor closeouts, probably epitomized by the Marcus Morris closeout on Marvin Bagley at the end of the first quarter, where Marvin Bagley drained a three, I believe. A lot of not-so-tight defense, a lot of not-so-Celtic defense. For those of us that have followed the Celtics for quite some time, the Celtics teams have, even under the Brad Stevens era, have been marked by very stingy, very tough defense. And of course, we all know that the heart and soul of the team, as I've been told for the past four plus years now, is Marcus Smart. And what type of player is Marcus Smart? He is a defensive player. And luckily, Marcus Smart actually got to play tonight, because two of our players, two of the Celtics players, Terry Rozier and Daniel Theis, were out, ruled out for tonight's game with an illness. Unspecified illness. I scoured the internet to find out what exactly was going on with the Boston Celtics. Much fuss was made that they needed to get out of L.A. as quickly as possible. Kyrie Irving was quoted after the Clippers game, or maybe it was before the Clippers game, somewhere around there, before leaving L.A., that they needed to get out of L.A. as quickly as possible. As much as it's nice to be out in the fun and sun of L.A., got to get back to Boston, and that's exactly what they did. But apparently a couple of the players brought back some funky California bug with them. You know how they do it out there in the West Coast. Some crazy people do some weird things, don't get vaccinated or whatever else it is that's going on. And Celtics came back with some crazy stuff. And Terry Rozier, Daniel Tice didn't play tonight. But guess who did play? Marvin Bagley III. After missing 2 weeks, a little bit over 2 weeks, injured his left knee against the Bucks back on February 27th. Came back tonight versus the Celtics. I have a nagging suspicion, being that the Sacramento Kings are about four and a half games out of the playoffs in the West, likely not going to make the playoffs. No margin for error there. But bringing Marvin Bagley back to face the Celtics, a little bit of motivation there, as the Celtics own the Sacramento Kings' first-round draft pick this year. So the Sacramento Kings are fighting for whatever position they can possibly get in order to deny the Boston Celtics that lovely draft pick. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's get back to this game, go over the stats real quick. Six Celtics scoring in double figures. As I mentioned, Kyrie Irving, the man of the evening. 31 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds, 11 of 28 shooting, only 1 of 9 from 3. Not great shooting from 3 for Kyrie Irving, but he did get to the line 9 times and made 8 of them. With that lone miss coming late in the game, garbage time, as the Sacramento Kings were trying to extend the game, extend the clock. Didn't work for them, but Kyrie Irving, fantastic game, triple-double, 31, 12, and 10 for the point guard. Excellent game, and if the choice are up to me, of course you can't ignore Kyrie Irving and the fantastic game that he had. But if I were handing out the helmet sticker, as I often talk about it, this was a football team, I would give my helmet sticker tonight, because I like to be one of those guys that, you know, pick somebody maybe that isn't as heralded or as expected. My helmet sticker for tonight would go to Jaylen Brown, because when this game started to get a little bit scary, then maybe not scary, but a little bit nervous in the third quarter, guess who came off the bench and drilled 3 straight three-pointers to keep the Sacramento, basically push the Sacramento Kings back and not let them back into the game. It was Jaylen Brown. My man Jaylen Brown didn't do much else in the game besides score. 22 points for Jaylen, had a rebound. That's about it. But 3 for 4 from three-point land, and those three came in a row in the third quarter, which really separated the Boston Celtics from the Sacramento Kings. The fourth quarter was essentially just holding on to that lead, building on that lead. I believe the Boston Celtics even got close to a double-figure lead, if not more. Not exactly positive, but Boston Celtics 126-120 win over the Sacramento Kings. Excellent game from Jason Tatum, especially in the first half. It was the first half was kind of a Kyrie Irving versus Buddy Hield duel. We can get into some Sacramento Kings stats if you guys don't mind. I'm not all that interested in the Sacramento Kings and what they did, but since they were the opponent tonight, might as well cover it. 34 points for Buddy Hield, winning the scoring duel with Kyrie Irving. That kid can really shoot, but not winning the game. And of course, Kyrie Irving with that triple-double, out-dueling Buddy Hield. And that first half was a Buddy Hield-Kyrie Irving duel with a side of Harrison Barnes versus Jason Tatum. And then later on in the game, De'Aaron Fox kind of took over, did some things. That kid is really fast. De'Aaron Fox, excellent, excellent. Fun player to watch, and a definite test for this Boston Celtics transition defense, because when De'Aaron Fox has the ball in his hands and he grabs a rebound or gets a loose ball and he goes straight to the basket, I don't know if there's a player that can catch him from behind. It's almost like in the NFL, like one of those wide receivers. He just mosses you. You got mossed, as they say in football. De'Aaron Fox will moss you. If there's such a thing in basketball as getting mossed, De'Aaron Fox is that guy that'll do it. Nice game for De'Aaron Fox. I believe 19 points for him. Fun to watch the kid, especially being out here on the East Coast. Don't get a chance to really see much of him because he's plays out on the West Coast and plays for the Sacramento Kings, which is almost a perpetual lottery team. Fantastic game for him. Harrison Barnes, 20 points, 4 assists, 5 rebounds. Not much off the bench. I guess Marvin Bagley came off the bench, had 14 points. Most of those, the same came, I think he had 10 in the first half, so most of those came in the first half. All Celtics in the second half, so really a tale of two halves. Boston Celtics coming back in the third quarter from a 17-point deficit in the first half to win this game by 6 going away. Real crazy shootout in this game. Boston Celtics took 95 shots in this game. Actually, this is my bad. Sacramento Kings took 95 shots in this game, made 48 of them, hit nearly 51% from the field. Boston Celtics took 97 shots, hit 49 of them, nearly 51% from the field. So there was some shooting going on in this game, although the three-point shooting left a little bit to be desired. Both teams shooting just above 32% from 3, 11 for 34 from the Kings, 9 for 28 from the Celtics, where the Celtics really separated themselves in this game, something that they have been unable to do through most of the season, and really been one of those things that Brad Stevens' teams haven't really excelled at to begin with, and that's attacking the basket. And the Boston Celtics attacked the basket, and despite all the complaints from Tommy Heinsohn, if you watch the NBC Sports Boston broadcast, you got to hear a lot of Tommy Heinsohn complaining about the referees tonight. But the Boston Celtics got to the line 26 times and hit 19 of them. And that was the difference, I believe, in this game, despite some of the bad calls and non-calls going against the Celtics early in the game. The Kings took 23 free throws but only hit 13 of them, for a percentage of just under 57%. Can't do that against a team like the Boston Celtics. Regardless of what you think of the Boston Celtics, they're wavering, they're floundering, they don't have it together, they don't have the chemistry. Maybe it's just a ruse or a fake, and that Kyrie Irving being a good leader and all those nice quotes, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show, about his teammates and wanting to play with his teammates for a long time, his Boston teammates for a long time. Maybe they didn't believe all that, but you cannot come into a game against the Boston Celtics or any other top-level team and shoot just barely over 50% from the line, especially if you get to 23 foul shots and expect to win the game. You make a couple more of those foul shots, Sacramento, and you win this game going away. But you didn't do that, and this is exactly what happened. You don't come into TD Garden, you don't win the game if you don't hit your free throws and you don't get it done. Once again, Boston Celtics winning 126-120. We'd like to remind everybody that this episode of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics Post Game Live is brought to you, as is every episode of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics Post Game Show, by Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. And Boston Barber and Tattoo Company sponsors our toll-free call lines. That's right, this is a live call-in show. So if you'd like to join the discussion, as I see some of you on the switchboard already, Paul in Connecticut, I see you. Make sure to dial 347-215-7771 toll-free, and when you hear the automated operator, please press 1 to let us know that you want to get on the air, unless I already screened you before the show. And if I didn't, I just see somebody just pressed 1. You guys are great listeners. This episode brought to you by Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. You ready for the read? I do it same every single time. Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list Boston celebrities like Gordon Hayward. Well, Milan Lucic, he's not a Boston celebrity anymore. I think he lives in Edmonton now, but maybe he still, you know, takes a road trip down to Boston to get his ears lowered at Boston Barber and Tattoo, along with Brad Marchand and Aaron, the former man bun, current buzz cut Baines. Boston Barber and Tattoo is more than just Boston's most well-known corner barber shop. It's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, and it should be billions of people that visit the beautiful North End of Boston throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. So if you would like a nice buzz cut like Aaron the Buzz Cut Baines, or a slick hipster comb over like my man Gordon Hayward, who scored a cool 10 points and 4 assists off the bench tonight. Make sure to head on over to 113 Salem Street on the north end of Boston and holler at your peoples at Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. With that, I'm going to go straight to the Boston Barber and Tattoo toll-free call lines. My man Paul in Connecticut dialed up just as I was setting up the show. I see you 978-413. I know you're just listening. I'm not even going to bother clicking on your name. Just let you keep listening. But Paul in Connecticut, what's good, my friend? It's good to hear from you. Long time no chat. What'd you think about this game? What do you think about this new look Celtics? I don't think we've talked since the plane ride, since the flight.
That's right, Nick. Great to get on the air with you, buddy. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. How are you? It's always great to hear from you, my friend.
You as well. So last time you and I talked was before the Magic plane ride, and we really were ripping into Irving for, I mean, probably half an hour. We were going back and forth, and we were really, I don't know if it was the first time it was mentioned, but we started the conversation about this team and really playing to Irving's personality. And
yes,
just unbelievable how different it's looked these past six or seven games. I mean, I'm trying to curb my enthusiasm here, but it's tough not to get excited when the team looks like they've looked lately. I tell you, that last game, a great week tonight, first and foremost. Nice comeback against the young, athletic team, and a game that the Celtics probably would have folded in even 2-3 weeks ago, I think, and wouldn't have put their foot on the gas pedal and come back. So, great win. Personally, the most impressed I've been, though, is, it's weird to say this, but that Clippers game that they lost, just the mentality and the body language of the team was so much different. It was really the first, like, stinker all year, Nick, where I didn't freak out after. And I didn't think, like, this team is reverting to old habits and, you know, they're going to go on a losing streak. I didn't think that at all. I just took it as one game. Have you noticed just a change in Irving's, how he's leading and the way he's interacting with his teammates? Everyone just looks so much comfortable. I mean, I know they're all pointing to that plane ride. I don't know if Kyrie heard some of the outside noise and he's really making an effort, but I've been impressed.
You know what? It's interesting, and Paul, that conversation that we had the last time we spoke on air, that was not the last time that I ripped Kyrie Irving, and I'm still not going to be, and I've told other hosts that I've hosted with, we had a long conversation, Joe Chiquette and I, who frequently host together, we just spent an entire postgame show. I forgot which game it was. It was probably the Lakers game. I'm not sure. One of the games that they had won, and we spent it was the Lakers game, because I remember talking about how the Celtics should have beat the Lakers G League squad by a few more points than they did, even though you can't really complain about that 13-point victory. But still, it was basically an entire show about how fickle Kyrie was, and even though the there was a plane ride and there was a big win, you know, can we really, you know, trust Kyrie? And I want to believe it's just such an odd juxtaposition to me, and maybe you can tell me I'm wrong, Paul, because I want to believe, and I've never been somebody that says get Kyrie out of town. I was misquoted on one of the previous post game shows. I never said get Kyrie out of town. What this could do is re-sign Kyrie Irving because they own his bird rights and can spend $35 million on Kyrie that they can't spend on anybody else, because without the bird rights they can't go over the salary cap. Not to get too deep into the weeds, but it's how much can we? I mean, it's just a weird juxtaposition to see Kyrie go from literally sulking in media, you know, question and answers, media sit downs, and post game interviews, throwing literally almost everybody under the bus. You know, there was a question asked at one of those post games before the Magic plane ride. I like that phrase. I'm going to use that. The Magic plane ride, where somebody asked Kyrie about how the team, you know, about redoubling their defensive efforts or rethinking their defensive scheme, and Kyrie said, "Ask Brad," or "That's on Brad." I mean, that to me sounds almost like throwing your coach under the bus. But then you come to, you know, post Magic plane ride, and it's like Kyrie is just turned into, like, the guy that we always wanted him to be. It's almost like, you know, I mean, I hate using the same analogies that I use, but it's almost like the abusive relationship type thing. It's like, you know, one minute Hardy's buying you flowers, the next minute he's beating your ass, and that's almost like how I feel after this, you know, this season of Kyrie Irving's, you know, moody, you know, up and down, you know, mercurial, enigmatic personality. But the thing that I like the most about it, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that the body language of this team has improved dramatically, even in the loss to the Clippers. It didn't feel like, ah, oh, shit, here we go again. We're back to the same old Celtics. It's the things that Kyrie has been saying. And to come out, Yahoo, this is a quote from Yahoo Sports. It was reported by Bleacher Report and everybody else. Kyrie Irving apologizing to the media and the way he's handled things. And he literally says, the way I've handled things, this is a direct quote, the way I've handled things, it hasn't been perfect. I've made a lot of mistakes that I take full responsibility for. I apologize. And then you have Kyrie Irving on the, I don't know if you've heard of the, Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles. They were two Clippers players back in the, I guess, the mid-90s or something.
Yeah, I remember. I've been watching this as long as you, Nick. So I've heard of
you
those,
I'm sure you have.
Before.
I'm sure you have, but for those listeners that are younger, just, you know, just assuming that maybe somebody doesn't know who Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles are, I actually have a Darius Miles champion jersey somewhere. It's cool. It's red, and it has, you know, the Clippers on the front. Anyways, they have a podcast called Knuckleheads, for those that don't follow every single podcast or every single NBA show. And Jason Tatum and Kyrie Irving appeared together as guests on the Q Rich and D Miles podcast, the Knuckleheads podcast. And Kyrie Irving spoke about Jason Tatum as if he's not only going to be here for, you know, the next year or two, but that he plans on playing with Jason Tatum for the rest of his career. And here's one more quote, and then I'll throw it back to you, Paul. Kyrie Irving to Jason Tatum on the show says, to Jason Tatum, I'll get out of your way once you get to that point, meaning that point in his career. Me and you going for the guts and glory when it's all on the line. I know I need you right next to me. So that says to me that Kyrie Irving is not only committed to being in Boston, and I think he said something also to the effect of he's going to make sure that Jason Tatum grows into a superstar, into an all-star, into a star player. This says that he's not only, you know, looking at staying in Boston for the long term, but if he wants Jason Tatum to stick around, that kind of puts a whole monkey wrench in all that talk that we had prior to the trade deadline, the whole, you know, the Anthony Davis thing. Anthony Davis trade out the window because the Pelicans aren't going to give up Anthony Davis. I think the Pelicans have already made it clear. Any trade for Anthony Davis must involve, quote-unquote must, I think is the headline that I read, must involve Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart. And I think that I don't know how much I see that happening. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Paul? Do you think that this new Kyrie Irving is here to stay, or are we going to go back to fickle Kyrie at some point?
My head is telling me not to trust it at all. One bit.
Right.
But my
Thank
heart
you.
Is telling me we're so late in the season. The playoffs are right around the corner. And like you, Nick, I root for the name in the front of the jersey, not the back of the jersey. So I'm almost going to force myself to not be a Kyrie stan because I don't think I could ever do that. He's just so weird and contradictory. The stuff that he says, puts out, just the quotes that you're talking about right now. And I don't think, I mean, I know there was a little bit of a report very early in training camp that Kyrie had reached out to Anthony Davis, or he wanted him to play with the Celtics. I think I saw a snippet. You know, I remember what Kevin Garnett said. I think it was his second or third year with the Celtics, maybe even fourth year. They were adding guys left and right. You know, you can't just put a bunch of stuff in a pot, mix it around, and call it chemistry. It doesn't work like that. And this is going to be kind of sacrilege, but this team has taken, 70 games almost to develop this chemistry. I almost don't want to see them throw a big, huge piece of chicken in the pot in Anthony Davis and take out your carrots and celery and Tatum and Brown. I don't know. That it sounds crazy right now, and maybe I'm just
No, that's a beautiful analogy. I love that. That's
like
a beautiful analogy.
7 games or so, but we both know, and this is why we've been so, I think, disappointed with the team. Not disappointed, but confused by this team all year, because we know all these players are good. And this is the rare case of you and I and all the other Celtic fans, I think, not overrating our players. Because, as you know, we thought, you know, Evan Turner was on his way to being an all-star at one point. So, I don't know, man. I just think right now where they are, I'm going to force my speculative starter. I'm going to force myself to believe, I think, in Irving, because it's so late. And the run is now. What they do from now until the end of the year, I mean, the seeding's going to be what it is. I don't know. Maybe you disagree with me, but I don't know that the seeding is going to matter too much in the Eastern Conference. I think 1-4 are all so evenly matched that it's going to be coaching, chemistry, and hustle that it comes down to as far as who wants it the most. Not to sound too cliche, but as far as the Eastern Conference playoffs, I think that grit and balls, as you like to say, are going to be what ends up taking one team above the other three. And, I mean, we got so many guys that have been there before. I'm trying to curb my enthusiasm. But like I said, I root for the front of the jersey, and it's tough this late in the year. And I'm not going back. And everything we talked about, and you've continued to say in the show about Irving, he is completely frustrating. I don't know if I could take 10 years of Kyrie doing this shit. but right now, I'm going to force it, man.
What's you know what? And I couldn't agree with you more. Like I said earlier, I feel like after this season, like I just got my ass kicked. Like watch it. This hasn't been like there's been some seasons where you know that what you're going to get from the Celtics is going to be futile. It's not going to get you anywhere. The last year of IT, you know, like you knew they weren't going to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals. You just knew it wasn't going to happen. But you loved watching the team. There was so much heart in that team. They overachieved. It was a lovable team. It was a team that you could embrace easily. There was another Celtics team in recent memory, the 2012 Celtics team, like the last year that the new big three, the Paul Pierce, KG, and that other guy that played with them, and Rajon Rondo, Judas Shuttlesworth, and made a strong run into the Eastern Conference Finals against the Miami Heat, the burgeoning Miami Heat, the new big three that, you know, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, who, you know, just destroyed that, you know, they put an end to the window closed on that, you know, that tiny little glimmer of hope that the big three, the new big three, might just make it back. And they almost made it back in 2012. And that team with Peaches, like Charles Barkley called them, Michael Peaches, and Goldie Blocks, Greg Steensman, those guys, you loved watching them because you knew they weren't as talented as the Miami Heat, but they had the will and the heart. And as I don't even know where I got, I think I must have got that from Kevin Garnett. But grit and balls, they had that, and you loved watching it. And this team is just—I mean, I like on an individual basis. If you put him in, you know what I'm saying? Just put him like in a 2K like simulator or something, and watch his moves. I love Kyrie Irving's moves. I love his game. I love his finesse. I love the jelly. I love his ambidextrous ability to finish with, you know, equally with both hands, both at the rim and shooting with lefty. He can shoot jump shots. He can shoot three-pointers with his left hand. The angles that he takes off the backboard, that was one of the things I loved so much about Rajon Rondo, was the way that he used the glass and the backboard from all kinds of crazy angles, off the wrong foot, using the wrong hand, all kinds of stuff. Kyrie does all of that, and he can get by anybody. He can break anybody's ankles. There's nobody in this league that he will not eventually, if he's going one-on-one, break their ankles. But it's just so hard to wrap your mind around a guy that went within the span of literally 2 months, less than 2 months, to I don't owe anybody shit, to I want to take this young guy, or I don't owe anybody shit. These young guys don't know what it takes, you know, to win, and don't know what it takes to get to, you know, the championship and all, or whatever else it is. To then going on, you know, the knuckleheads Q Rich and D Miles show and talk about how he wants to mold Jason Tatum for the foreseeable future into a star, and it's like, where did that Kyrie come from? Why couldn't we get, you know? And then the body language on the bench pre and post Magic Flight. You know, there was a meme I saw floating around on Instagram where they, you know, played that that sad music from Adventure Time or whatever cartoon it is, you know, that little sad song where it was the game. I forgot which game it was. I think it was the first Clippers loss. And you could see Kyrie Irving basically having that look on, pulling his lips out, and LeBron James is looking at him like, why aren't you taking this seriously? Then you get Kyrie basically in that exact same position looking at the young guys on his bench and like, why aren't you taking this seriously? And then a couple games later, against the Warriors, it's like he's laughing and he's, you know, he's joking, he's all over the place and he's happy and he's just all on the sidelines, and it's like, how does he go from one to the other? But like you, Paul, you just have to embrace it, because I'm a Celtics fan. I'm not going to be a Kyrie stan, and I'm going to end this rant that I'm on, and that I've seen a lot of people blame everybody else on this team except for Kyrie. And say, oh, it's not Kyrie. The fans are going to run Kyrie out of Boston. The Boston media is going to run Kyrie out of Boston. Everybody else is going to run. They literally, we must walk on eggshells and do everything to make Kyrie happy. And my question is, what in the hell did anybody ever do to make Kyrie think that he wasn't wanted here? I mean, we loved Isaiah Thomas, and we sucked up that trade because we knew that Kyrie Irving is a special player. How many players would we say game of all your teammates' career and schedule a surgery and don't show up and then give them a pass for it? That would almost never happen in Boston sports and Boston sports fandom, but it happened for Kyrie Irving. We as fans, and I think that Danny Ainge also, in the front offices, have done everything to make Kyrie Irving happy, and to my knowledge, haven't done anything to alienate him. So it's just, to me, kind of, it's still hard to digest how quickly, in just a plane flight, with literally the reports out of that plane flight was just bonding over games of Uno. You know, like Magic plane flight, you know, in card games of Uno, and suddenly Kyrie Irving wants to be like, you know, Granddaddy Celtic. And I'm all with it if he stays that way. I said to Joe Chiquette the other night, I said, I won't believe it until the ink is dry on the contract. And then I'll say, okay, now we have Kyrie, we can stop asking that question. But for right now, I think the fact, and you mentioned it, it's so late. I think the fact that there's such a thing as peaking too early. Just ask the Brooklyn Nets or the New Jersey Nets, whatever they call themselves nowadays. They peaked a little bit. They peaked before the All-Star weekend, and now they're struggling to stay in the playoffs, to stay at the bottom of the pack. The Celtics are peaking at the right time. Just got to hope that going into the playoffs, that they can hold on to it, because they're going to need every advantage they can get, because they're probably not going to have home court advantage. If maybe in the first round, but definitely not if they face the Toronto Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks, because they're not catching up with those guys, right?
Right. I think they'll be okay even without home court. I maybe that's just me wearing my green goggles, but I don't think they're going to get knocked out first round of the playoffs. I think we'll at least win a round, and then obviously the dream scenario is get all the way to the finals. But I don't know about you, man, but I would rather root for a team like this, as crazy and enigmatic as they are, than have that underdog team. I'd rather have a team that's in that championship discussion from beginning to end than that team that has a ceiling on it. Personally,
you know what? I don't disagree with that either. I don't disagree with that either. You just sometimes want to see the same, you know, passion, like we as fans, you know, like it's everything to us. You know what I'm saying? Like I didn't, you know, I remember when the Patriots lost those two Super Bowls to the Giants. Like I didn't leave my house for the week after those games because I was so, you know what I'm saying, devastated by those losses. And it's the same thing. Game 7 of the 2010 NBA championship robbery, where the Lakers shot 24 free throws in the fourth quarter, when the Celtics went into the fourth quarter with the lead and the Lakers shot like 24 free throws. I didn't get over that for the entire summer after that. It was like that ruined my summer. So you want to see, like, sometimes from the players, you know, some of the same passion that we as fans, you know, feel, and it just seemed like maybe we weren't getting that from Kyrie. And just to piggyback off something that you said, to your point, Paul, you mentioned how long it took. And for me, I put that time frame even longer, because this isn't like it's Kyrie's first year here. He spent nearly an entire year with the Celtics last season. It's almost like it's taking Kyrie – you know, not just the, what was it, the 67 or, you know, 60, you know, five games that it took him, you know, took them this season to gain some chemistry, but I think you got to include last season as well, because clearly that chemistry wasn't there or didn't carry over, or something wasn't, you know, right from last season to this season, because, you know, the start of this season and up until the Magic plane flight was brutal for Celtics fans. It was like, you know, like it was just heart-wrenching from, you know, from one game to the next trying to figure out. And I don't know how many times on the show we said, oh, they've won a few games in a row. I think they've, you know, they flipped that switch. They finally turned the corner. And the next thing you know, they're losing, you know, to the Lakers at home and the Clippers at home, and then they're getting blown out by the Houston Rockets at home. And it's like, what happened? You know, we've heard this song and dance before. I think now is the right time. There's, what, 13 games left on the season, and I think most of them are against playoff competitive teams. A couple of games against the Pacers, those are going to be critical games, especially with the Pacers without Oladipo. They're still clinging to that, you know, third or fourth seed, and the Celtics would like to get into the, you know, the top four seed. But, you know, I think they're peaking at the right time, and I'm going to be with you, Paul, and I'm going to go all in for the Celtics team and just cross my fingers that Kyrie Irving stays this way until July 1st. The Boston Celtics do enough in the playoffs to convince Kyrie that, hey, not only does he want to come back in July 1st, but he sits down with Danny and says, I don't need, you know, Anthony Davis. I don't want to, you know, we just built up all this chemistry. Let's keep these guys. Let's keep Jason Tatum, like he said on the Knuckleheads podcast, on the Q Rich and D-Miles podcast. Let's keep Marcus Smart, the heart and soul of the Boston Celtics team, the Swiss Army knife, the defensive master. Let's keep those guys, because I think what you're seeing with a lot of these wins and a lot of these is depth. Other teams can't compete with the Celtics' depth. Their second unit is better than some of these, you know, teams like the Sacramento Kings. I won't say the Sacramento Kings because they're a decent team. They have some nice depth and some nice players, but their second unit can compete with some starting units if the chemistry is right and everything is going well. So, yeah, I'm going to be with you, Paul, and I'm going to go all in on this. There's no other choice. I'm a Celtics fan, so I'm happy for it. I just don't want to be that guy that after every loss, Kyrie's leaving, this team is terrible, then after every win, we're winning the championship again. I just don't want to be that guy. So I'm going to maintain a little bit of a level head. But on the inside, I really am just – I can't wait for the playoffs to start, because at that point, everything is real. You know what I mean? And everything counts. It's a new season, and I think that playoffs, and I'm going to kick it back to you, Paul, with that. I think once that playoff starts, it's a new season. All this other stuff is water under the bridge, and the Boston Celtics will make it happen. Like you said, I think maybe I value home court advantage a little bit more than you do, because I agree there's so much parity up in the top four, those four elite teams, Toronto, Milwaukee, the Celtics, and the Sixers. So I think that, you know, with that much parity, having home court advantage would be a nice thing. But I think once the playoffs start and you get to see how they're playing when the playoffs are underway, I think is how we'll is it take until the playoffs for us to finally say, yeah, the Celtics are doing what the Celtics are supposed to do. But I'm going to be with you, Paul, and I'm going to be positive for these next 13 games and going into the playoffs, because as a Celtics fan, it doesn't do any good to be negative about it. And with that, is there anything else you do have?
Maybe this taught Irving what a delicate mix a basketball team is, because when he was with Cleveland, he wasn't the guy. It was LeBron's team. And the way LeBron led guys, I mean, guys would never seem to be happy playing next to LeBron. He wasn't happy. Kevin Love wasn't happy. The role players, the guys that know their role players, were happy. But the guys that were borderline all-star status, besides Wade and Bosch, none of the other superstars ever seemed to be pleased playing with Wade. So maybe Irving's finally starting to realize that, you know, a basketball team is not like NBA 2K. It is like a living, breathing organism almost, where you have to, I don't know, you have to be cognizant of the way your teammates are feeling. You have to be willing to get them shot sometimes, even though you want to do your behind-the-back dribble and you want to do this or that. But maybe he's taking a lesson out of that. I know it's too early to say that yet, but we'll see. Maybe that's the silver lining that comes out of this whole thing. And not for nothing, having the media, and I don't want to stand up too much for Irving here, but being a superstar in the NBA in 2019 is way different than it was even in 2005 when you were coming up on free agency or something like that. The questions don't stop. You've got agencies planting fake stories. And like I said, I am not taking blame away from Kyrie because he was complicit in a lot of this by talking, like you and I discussed before. But it's a lot to handle. And I don't think there's a real playbook because that's changing every day and how much exposure you're getting. And, you know, guys looking up, they're paying attention to Twitter. That stuff didn't even exist 13, 14 years ago. So, like I said, I hope he's taking something out of this. And I, like you, I hope they get home court advantage because the Boston crowd can carry them to a couple of wins in the postseason. And I don't want to see Game 7 in Philly or Toronto or Milwaukee should it get to that point. And, I mean, the other important part of this whole stew is Gordon Hayward really starting to look a little bit more consistent as far as getting that confidence back. And he doesn't have to score 20, 30 points a game. But as long as he's involved and he's confident in his ability, he's such a big pickup and upgrade from the guy we saw earlier this year when we called him, what were you calling him, a limp noodle or something like that. So even a game like tonight, he just had 10 points. Just such a big-time upgrade. And now Brown, he's feeling his role. He's more comfortable. So the pieces are starting to fit together a little bit. And it just remains to be seen if they can keep this up, brother. I know you got other people calling in, man. I'll let you go. Great to talk to you as always, Nick.
Awesome, Paul. Paul from Connecticut, as always, fantastic discussion. It's always good to get a prolonged conversation going. It's good to get other Celtics fans and other Celtics fanatics, I should say, opinions on these things. And it's good to hear that I'm not crazy when it comes to my analysis of Kyrie Irving. And if it seems like I'm up and down a little bit with Kyrie, it's probably because Kyrie is just an up and down kind of guy. So but please don't blame me if after one game I'm super hype, you know, Kyrie stand, and then after another game I'm a little bit down on Kyrie. I think that's just the Kyrie roller coaster. And, you know, I'm not going to hold it against you, Paul, or anybody else. And I hope nobody holds it against me. I'm still going to be a little bit skeptical, but I'm not going to take a loss like the Clippers loss. And I think, you know, as Paul and I just discussed, we didn't feel after the Clippers loss that the Celtics were, you know, headed back down the, you know, treacherous road of, you know, falling apart at the seams, losing all chemistry, and, you know, basically collapsing and plummeting back down to earth after that magic plane flight, so to speak. But I guess this is as much as Kyrie is learning, because Kyrie has never been the man on a team before. I mean, I suppose he was the man when the Cavaliers didn't have LeBron, but, I mean, that wasn't really a team to be the man on. I mean, he could do whatever he wanted. He didn't have to do anything else on that team because the team wasn't playing for anything. So he could do whatever he wanted. And I think that's a luxury that some of the young Celtics players like Jason Tatum, like Jaylen Brown, like Terry Rozier, they tasted last year and that they didn't have this season. And I've been saying it. Someone said it, and I think it was on this show. I don't remember who it was that said it. But it's been a point that's really stuck in my head for pretty much the entire season. And that's the rarity of having a player like Jason Tatum picked, you know, third in the draft. Well, you know, technically first, but, you know, third because Philadelphia are morons. And, you know, Jaylen Brown picked, I think, what was Jaylen Brown picked? Somewhere like sixth or something like that, third, one or the other. High picks. All these guys, and basically turn them loose last year with Gordon Hayward out, with Kyrie Irving out, turn them loose. Just say, hey, play your game. We have no expectations. And then the next, because most of those players that are drafted that high in the lottery, they go to trash teams. And they're basically able to shape their games and play their games the way they want to because the team is trash and they're not playing for anything anyway. But with the Celtics, they got to have that one season last year where there were no expectations. And then it was almost like, reel it all back, you know, reel it all back in. Don't get carried away. Kind of now you got to play back within the system. Now we got to play around Kyrie. Now we got to reintegrate Gordon Hayward. And it was almost like the natural progression of a lottery pick rookie was stifled for a lot of these, you know, a lot of these kids. And I think young men, I should say, not kids. And you can see how Marcus Smart kind of was able to navigate through it, because Marcus Smart is a veteran now. He's off his rookie contract. He got signed. He's not playing for, you know, the bigger money. He got his bigger money deal. But then you have guys like Terry Rozier that are looking at, you know, I would imagine for a guy like Terry Rozier, who played so well last year in the playoffs, and he did have some of his off games. He wasn't fantastic in that Game 7 against Cleveland, but who became Scary Terry, who became one of those, you know, classic Boston sports, you know, mythical characters, you know, almost like, I mean, if he had kept going, if Kyrie had never came back, if something else had happened, and Scary Terry, that legend had continued to grow, Scary Terry might have been, you know, maybe not quite, you know, the White Mamba, you know, Scalabrine style, you know, mythological hero. But, I mean, that moment of the Scary Terry era for that, you know, those few games that he was Scary Terry, I mean, that was some beautiful stuff. And then now you're watching Scary Terry, and in the back of his mind, he's probably thinking, well, I mean, this is the same thing that happened to Isaiah Thomas, minus the hip injury, is that I was playing really well, I got everybody to notice me, and then the next year, nothing, because now I'm taking the back seat to Kyrie Irving and I can't show everybody what I can do, and I'm not going to get that same big contract that I would have gotten. So I think that's probably something that, you know, got involved with a lot of those young players. And all it took was Kyrie Irving to just embrace them and say, hey, I'm here to help guide you guys through. But Kyrie Irving had to figure it out for himself first. And I think that's where Paul and I basically got to in our conversation. And I think that's, Paul left it off on a very good point, that, you know, it's different being a superstar in the league in 2019 compared to even 2009 or 1999. It is entirely different. It's the social media era. The microscope is so much bigger. And at the same time, the responsibilities on the player and the freedoms on the players are so much greater as well, in large part due to things like LeBron James forming his own super team down in Miami and doing all those things. Players have more responsibility. Players have more, but also more freedom. Players are making more money. And Kyrie Irving had to learn that for himself. And it took him literally a year and a half in Boston before all of this stuff started to come together. And now with the Magic plane ride and now with these past few games, I'm hoping that this new positive attitude, maybe I can speak some truth to power. I don't believe in that, but maybe I can speak some truth to power, that the Boston Celtics have finally found their chemistry. They finally turned the corner. They finally hit that switch, and they're going to finish this next 13 games out. Let's say they're going to go 10-3. That's going to be my prediction. I predicted 10-5 when we were talking about the last 15 games. I'm going to say 10-3 for the last 13. Stay optimistic and just hope beyond hope that Kyrie not only stays in Boston, but that he also lobbies Danny Ainge to keep the young guys together. With that, I'm going to go back to the Boston Barber and Tattoo Company toll-free call line, 347-215-7771. I have a call from 781-781. You are live on the air. I can press this button. 781, you're live on the air. Did you want to talk on the air?
Yeah. So this is Chris from Boston. I was just going to...
What's up, Chris,
you know,
Boston?
Yeah, so I was talking about Gordon Hayward, because, man, this guy, in the first half, he might have had the worst half I think I've ever seen a player have. Honestly, he missed layups. He had, like, confusion with Al Horford on whose man they had. He had confusion with Smart on whose man they had. He had, you know, the backdoor cut. He, you know, he was just screwing everything up, and he was off on his shot. He couldn't do anything. And then in the second half, he still continued to have the ball. And, you know, it was funny. I saw that, you know, the behind the back turnover just pissed me off in the third quarter. You know, he was going behind the back, and you noticed that after that play on the other end, he was arguing with Marcus Morris. And you could see them, the TNT camera, like right before it went to break, it like showed them, and basically they were like getting into it. And Hayward was saying, like, give me space, because if you watch that play again, you know, Moore sets the pick and he rolls, and he like rolls right, you know, like 5 feet away from him, you know, down the 3-point line. And he just crowded his space, and they were going back and forth. But, you know, Morris has been pissing me off. You know, he's minus 7 tonight. He had, you know, 20 and 14 or 12 or whatever. But, you know, he's a minus 7. He took 7 threes. Jason Tatum took 2 threes. You know, the play, that highlight that I come across from, that Marcus Morris game tonight was that one play where he passed the ball. Remember, he had the ball on the right wing, and he was going to do his usual one-on-one, but then he kind of lost the handle, and it bounced toward the three-point line, and he passed it to Tatum. And then Tatum did his thing and scored. And, like, every single time he gets the ball, you just know he's going to shoot it. And it just drives me nuts. And, sorry, just, I don't know, Nick, how you feel about that. But, you know, in Smart it's, tonight, I'll give you just a little. This team has obviously turned the corner in the soul plane, you know, Kumbaya, the whole Kyrie
soul
thing.
Plane.
You know, he's finally being a leader. It's weird. It made me nervous initially when he wanted to leave Cleveland the way that he did. And I think he put those kind of fears to rest the first year. And then kind of what's happened this year, you know, it makes me nervous that, like, the team can be so impacted by the mood, you know, of that one guy. You know, that makes me nervous as the level of control.
Oh, yeah.
But
I think everybody should be nervous because, for anybody that's listened to this show and shows that I've hosted before, I've gone nearly off the deep end over the possibility that, you know, Danny Ainge is going to, you know, make some you know, pretty rash decisions, some major decisions, all to placate or to, you know, make Kyrie Irving happy, only, you know, to risk Kyrie Irving leaving, you know what I mean, or something to that extent, you know, like someone who is so, one of the longtime
fickle.
Callers, Isaiah
fickle.
In Jersey, refers
fickle.
To as flighty. I call him fickle. You know what I'm saying?
Flighty.
Someone that's that fickle to sacrifice so much for a player like that. But at the other end, I mean, how often do you get a chance to have a generational type player like Kyrie Irving? So it's almost like a gift and a curse, especially with a guy like Kyrie.
He's in the perfect place too, though. He's in the perfect. We have the best new practice facility. It's just like out of this world.
Yep.
You know, right by you know, they have, you know, a great coach, a great GM, the history. They let him, like, basically not, like, he doesn't live in Boston. He just, like, comes here to play and then, you know, kind of is off, you know, jet setting or, you know, doing his thing. You know, he has it made, and he can make more money here than anywhere else. So he really would have to be more than fickle to leave, you know. The question
yeah,
would be,
and, you know, the interesting
Celtics
thing,
not offer him the full 5 years, and does he then not take it or something?
Right, yeah, that's the situation for me that would be a nightmare, is if Kyrie Irving said, okay, I'm going to take a 1-1, for example, like a one-year deal with a one-year player option, so basically a two-year deal with this, you know, one-year guarantee with a one-year player option that he can opt out of, and then Danny goes ahead and then trades, you know, Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or Marcus Smart or all of them, for a guy like Anthony Davis who only has a year left on his contract, and then what you have, you know, is the potential for in, you know, a season for both of those guys to be gone. You know what I mean? If Kyrie doesn't commit long term that 5-year contract,
right,
only the Boston Celtics can offer him. And you, and to your point, and you mentioned, you know, he'd be crazy, and some of the other hosts on this show, especially Joe Chiquette, loves making that point, and I think there's definitely validity to it, that the Boston Celtics can offer him total contract over that 5 years, something like $70 million more than any other team in the league can offer him throughout the duration of that contract. And then you hear Kyrie Irving saying things like, well, I have to do, like during that whole stretch right before the trade deadline where he started talking about doing what's best for his family. And my question always was, he's not married. I don't think he has any kids. He only ever talks about his dad, and his dad lives in New York. What is he talking about his family? And what would be the best choice for your family that you don't really have other than that extra $70 million? I mean, that's, you know, $70 million
right,
is $30 million away from a tenth of a billion. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, or something like that. I don't know. Maybe my math is wrong. But that's a lot of money. And, you know, what better than, you know, taking that? But Kyrie's just one of those guys,
well,
that,
you know,
and I've maintained it. Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, Nick, you know, if we get Kyrie and AD, I am not nervous that either of them would leave. If we got both of them, I'm more nervous that AD would, like, tear his ACL or, you know, rip his Achilles, and then Kyrie would have, like, a mental breakdown and demand a trade or something, and then we would be,
you know, and then we would have traded Tatum and Brown and Smart, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you see, you see the degree of almost PTSD that Celtics fans have now is like we're literally imagining, you know what I'm saying, any type of like crazy scenario that may occur in which, you know, half the team is traded and then Kyrie Irving demands a trade and leaves or something. Talking about like way down the line type of, you know what I'm saying, hypotheticals. But that's kind of the season that has been, you know what I mean? That's kind of what it's been like on the Kyrie Irving ride for this past season plus, you know what I mean? It's like what can we expect long term from Kyrie Irving? And I think that you're absolutely right. Anthony Davis has shown to be fairly injury prone for a young player, and you have Jason Tatum, you have Jaylen Brown. I'm a big advocate for those guys. I think depth in today's NBA is extremely underrated, and I think the Boston Celtics and Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge have the potential with the talent they have on this roster, if they can hold on to it for a couple of years longer, because they've got some really nice talented players still on cheap rookie contracts that they could set. I mean, the Golden State Warriors built through the draft, but Danny Ainge has the ability to do something different and not do the same thing that everybody else is doing, which is let's throw together, you know, a couple of two or three superstars that like to play together. He has the ability to do something different by having a, you know, well-balanced young roster with lots of depth that can run a second unit that can, you know, they can, if not, you know, maintain the lead that the starting unit gains, but they can actually build on that lead. You have guys like Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier coming off the bench. I don't think they're going to be able to keep Terry in the offseason. Terry's going to probably leave with, you know, a decent contract at least. But I think that, you know, Danny Ainge has the opportunity to set a new precedent for the league with that type of, you know, that type of really deep team. But then again, I don't know, because you have those, you know, Jaylen Brown's going to be asking for a contract after next year, and then, you know, all that stuff is just.
But you know what? You know what though, Nick? Here's what I saw. I saw this a couple of tweets today about this, that like the Celtics are projected right now to have 3 first round picks this year. That doesn't include that Memphis, you know, sure lottery pick coming up. That's like the jewel of the, you know, of the crowns. And then so with all of those and Robert Williams and Smart and you know, they and Brandon Ingram now having this blood clot that he could be, you don't know, his value is just completely gone. So I don't see how any team, the Celtics can put a better offer together than any team without including Tatum, no question. And, you know, maybe even without Brown if they did it right. So, you know, obviously you can't pay them all, though. That's the thing. You have to trade Hayward in that scenario. But hey, whatever. You know, you're right. I don't want to – I think the Celtics this year is really where we should be. And, Nick, that's not – Nick, looking forward, that is not a Kyrie thing. This will be the last thing I'll kind of end on this. That looking forward thing, Kyrie does that. He exemplifies it. But that's like NBA-wide. That's what you were talking about earlier with the way LeBron started that, you know, that industry. Players going to have all the control, and they could just leave and demand a trade, and then you're just stuck, and you're stuck, you know, that kind of thing. So, so they kind of created this monster, and now they don't like it. So it's kind of interesting, you know, how that works. Anyways, Nick, always appreciate the great insight you provide and the humor. And man, keep it real. Bye.
Awesome. I appreciate the call. I believe it was Chris in Boston, 781. At least someone finds me funny. I bring some humor. At least I'm not laughing at myself, because sometimes I feel like I'm just sitting here in my living room, in my radio studio with my professional microphone. You can hear it. I'm broadcasting live from cell block 4. Sometimes I think I'm just sitting here laughing by myself. But apparently someone else thinks that I'm somewhat entertaining, so I appreciate that. Fantastic insight from, I believe the name was Chris. I'm sorry if I got it wrong. From Chris, who just called in, fantastic insight and absolutely 100% correct that it is NBA-wide, that mentality that we're seeing now, that attitude that we're seeing now. It was I don't know if it was started by LeBron James, but he definitely accelerated that process with the whole decision and taking my talents to South Beach and doing the super team thing down in Miami. It's definitely a different NBA. It's NBA-wide. It's just as a Boston sports fan, and I don't know how many of our listeners are fans of all Boston sports teams or just the Celtics and somebody else. I know there's some crazy combinations out there of people that are fans of the Celtics and they like the Dodgers and then they like the Cowboys and then they like the Oilers in hockey. I like the Celtics. I like the Red Sox. I like the Patriots and I like the Bruins. And there's one thing that I would like to see, and maybe this is why I've been so hard on Kyrie Irving in this season, is that as a Boston sports fan, even though I live in Florida now, I am from New Bedford. I will remind everybody every single show that I'm from New Bedford, Massachusetts, Buzzards Bay, the armpit right there down on the South Coast, that Boston sports fans, I'd like to see the Celtics become something like the New England Patriots in that you take players. It doesn't matter who you are, whether it's, Flash Gordon, whether it's Josh Gordon, whether it's, whoever that comes in, may have some baggage, but comes in and then learns the Patriot way and all that baggage disappears, at least for the time. Maybe not disappears. Obviously, in the case of Josh Gordon, it didn't disappear completely, but he played 11 games and had 700 yards for the Patriots and was an integral part of the Patriots during the season. But that Patriots way, and I see a lot of overlap or, similarities between the way Brad Stevens likes a lot of versatility in his players and in their ability to play multiple positions and having a lot of overlap in talent on the court, so you have multiple ball handlers and the ability to switch different matchups and even the tendency to use the beginning of the season to tinker with roster lineups and matchups and rotations the way Bill Belichick does in the first four games of the NFL season. It's almost like for the Patriots, the first four games of the season are an extended preseason almost. And you see some of those overlaps, but you'd like to see maybe and maybe it's just too much to ask. Maybe it's just a high expectation. Maybe I'm a spoiled Boston sports fan. But, just like a guy like Kyrie come in, put all that, baggage aside and say, I am a Boston sports fan. Boston is going to embrace me. I'm going to embrace Boston. You don't have to live in Boston year-round. Tom Brady doesn't live in Boston year-round. Tom Brady goes back and lives in California in the off-season. But to have him put aside some of his ego and put aside some of those things to grab his lunch pail, blue collar, that's Boston sports, blue collar, do your job, get it done. And I just probably would have liked to have seen less of the drama and histrionics and things that caused this season to be so bumpy and rough and traumatizing to some degree for some fans, because you hear some of the conversations we're having here about the possibilities of what may happen with Kyrie down the line. And it really is almost, maybe not traumatizing, but in the world of sports, somewhat maybe uncomfortable. And you just like to see maybe Kyrie as he comes to Boston and as Boston fans embrace him, as they've embraced nearly no other athlete in this past generation. I mean, they embraced Kyrie and let him get away with a lot of things I don't think that Boston sports fans would have let other athletes get away with. I keep mentioning missing that game 7, but it's a different NBA. Kyrie Irving is still young. I believe he's, 25, 26 years old. He's learning to be a leader for himself now, and we as fans, analysts, podcast hosts, kind of have to take a deep breath and realize, hey, this guy is figuring it out himself. We don't have all the answers. I sure as hell can't get out there and lead the Boston Celtics. I can coach a girls middle school basketball team pretty well, but I can't get out on the court and do all the jelly and all the ankle breakers and all the handles. I can't do all that stuff. So relax, let Kyrie Irving do his thing. It's a ride and we're all on it. It's Kyrie's world. It's flat, and we're just living in it. But you just like to see maybe Kyrie put some of that stuff aside, put some of the ego aside, and I think he's done that recently with the things that he's been saying in the media. And that's one of the most important things, is to not feed the media. And I think Kyrie thought that he could control the media narrative, and you can't, because the media doesn't care about consistency. The media doesn't care about, really doesn't care about ethics. They'll pretend to care about ethics and get all in an uproar when they think the ethics are being violated against them, or it's not in their favor. But anytime they can violate it, they'll do it and then hide their hand from the cookie jar. You can't outdo the media because they don't play by any rules, and they have a bigger microphone than you do as a player, or than any player does. And Kyrie had to learn that. I think he's learned that. And if what he said in the Knuckleheads, and I keep referring to that podcast with Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles, if what he said about wanting to groom Jason Tatum and needing Jason Tatum by his side, if what he says is true with that, then – excuse me, I'm all behind Kyrie Irving. And I'm just going to end this monologue on a quote from Shaquille O'Neal where he said, one of the most important things he learned was to let the young bucks, the young talent on his team, do their thing, because it made the job easier for him, Shaquille O'Neal. So if you remember when Kobe came in, Shaq didn't want to give up the team to Kobe. And it was always Shaq's team. The Lakers were always Shaq's team. They wouldn't have won that three-peat with Shaq if Shaq wasn't there. And I've always argued that Shaq would have won those three championships with whatever style wing you put on that team. You could have put Vince Carter on that team instead of Kobe, three-peat. Tracy McGrady instead of Kobe, three-peat. Name another, good wing, three-peat, because it was Shaq that made it happen. But as soon as Shaq, relinquished some of that, he would have had to do that with any of those players I just listed. And as soon as he did that for Kobe, the Lakers were a better team for it. I mean, they started winning almost immediately anyway, because you put Shaq on there and it was like, there it is. But, and Kyrie is learning that now as well. So I'm going to end this show on a positive note. It seems like Kyrie has finally fully embraced his role as leader of the Boston Celtics, as mentor of this young team. The losses, the body language in these losses are not the same. It's not the same body language that we saw from losses prior to the Soul Plane Magic plane ride. And I think the Boston Celtics are peaking at the right time with just 13 games to go in the season. Speaking of 13 games left to go, the next game will be Saturday at home, a noon game, 12:30. Versus Atlanta, so make sure to tune in. The post-game show will be an early one that day. I'm guessing if the game starts at 12:30, post-game show will probably begin around 2.5 hours after the game. So make sure to tune in to the CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game show live Saturday after the Atlanta game at home in Boston. Once again, tonight, the Boston Celtics returning home after a successful West Coast road trip, defeating the Sacramento Kings at TD Garden, 126-120, behind a fantastic, outstanding triple-double by Kyrie Irving, 31 points, 12 assists, and 10 rebounds. For the point guard, Kyrie Irving, the enigmatic, mercurial, moody, star of the show, Mr. Dynamite, Kyrie Irving, and of course a stellar game from Jaylen Brown, whose three triples in a row really took the Kings out of this game and gave the Celtics the key to coast throughout the fourth quarter. So once again, Boston Celtics 126-120. I am your host, Nick Sesento, for the CLNS Media staff. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure to tune in again Saturday as the Boston Celtics take on the Atlanta Hawks at TD Garden. Have a good night, y'all.
Every neighborhood has a heartbeat. Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents what being home is all about. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Aaron Baines, and the list goes on over the years. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's a spot to catch up while getting lined up. And it's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the epicenter of the neighborhood at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
your first choice for Internet Sports Talk Radio, CLNS Radio.